This is How Success Happens, where we talk to polar explorers, war correspondents, founders, ultramarathoners, authors, artists, and a range of other unique personalities to help you understand the capabilities behind how success happens.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
When I'm training for an ultramarathon, anywhere from 100 to 120 miles a week would be in my training cycle. Lots of miles.
You sold something like 250,000 books.
I'm the managing editor at entrepreneur.com and your host, Linda Lacina. Today, we talk to Karen Young. She is the founder of WeShave, a beauty company for women that's trying to make shaving fun again. She was likely born an entrepreneur, and instead of dreaming up unicorns like some little girls, she was dreaming up a street sweeping company. Today, WeShave saw 300% growth in 2016, thanks in part to partnerships with retailers such as Anthropologie and Urban Outfitters, and it's still mostly self-funded. She'll talk today about tenacity and how she uses it to solve problems. Hi, Karen. How are you?
I'm good, Linda. How are you? I'm so excited to be here.
We are excited to have you, very much. So why don't you sort of catch us up a little bit? Tell us about the path that takes us to WeShave.
Okay, so I launched WeShave in 2015, early 2015 officially. And, you know, the path that led to WeShave for me was actually just trying to solve my own problem, which was really aggravated and sensitive skin as a result of shaving. I had worked in beauty for about 4 years up to that point, and I worked for one of the most prestigious beauty companies in the United States. And I had access to every single thing that you could think of, every mascara, every face cream, from the low to mid-tier to high-end. And when I went home, I was shaving with a pink razor, like sort of, you know, crappy little razor in the corner of my shower. There was nothing sexy about it. There was nothing fulfilling about it at all. And on top of that, it actually left my skin completely raw and ravaged. And I wondered, you know, was I the only person that was having that problem? So I started asking around, and it turned out that I was not the only one. And I also wasn't the only one, the only woman who ever sort of looked at shaving as like, oh gosh, like, all right, we have to do it, but does it have to be awful, you know, on top of it? And that led me down a path of just looking at the company that I was working for and that incredible history of building beautiful, reputable brands that actually worked and that women were fans of and came to time and time again. And then sort of pairing that with this concept that I was seeing occur at the time. So I was in the sort of prestige company that handled things the old-fashioned way. And then on the other hand, I had this obviously an entrepreneurial mindset, but I also was seeing companies that were coming to the forefront of the shopping revolution, which was basically, you know, direct to consumer, cutting out the middleman, talking to the customer. And it occurred to me, what if we, you know, could actually take something like shaving, pair that prestige perspective, which is really thoughtful ingredients, really beautiful branding, really great packaging, pull all of that together and pair it with like a direct-to-consumer type of experience. And one in particular where we finally started talking to our customer as opposed to sort of talking at them.
And just to sort of get the listener on the same playing ground, the company that you worked for, what was the name of it?
It was Estee Lauder.
Estee Lauder, right. So that, I think that helps people understand sort of the reputation and the legacy and the reach that you were able to learn from in sort of figuring out, okay, what's my next path if I'm going to try to solve this sort of a smaller sector of the universe here. Let's talk a little bit about that street sweeper thing because I can't let it go. okay. So you not only did you have this idea for a company, but you also sort of invented a street sweeper. Tell me about this so everyone knows.
We were given an assignment in school. And the assignment was to think about doing something differently and like how would we sort of redo something, you know, that was being done and sort of out in the world already. And I came up with the street sweeper. And the reason I came up with the street sweeper was because it really, really bothered me. I'd be walking to school in the morning and this thing would come by and it would just sort of, you know, spin dust and grit and dirt all onto the sidewalk and then have like a trail of dirty, gross water behind it. And it truly, I was just like, I don't understand the purpose of this machine. So I went home and I like took out my piece of art paper and my crayons and I was just like, I'm going to redo the street sweeper. And so I had, you know, this, to me, in my mind, it probably looked like the most amazing modern thing. Like I was probably, in my head, I was probably designing the iPhone at that time.
Of course, yeah.
But I'm sure it was some, you know, junky little thing that I sort of pulled together. And, you know, I changed the way that the water was dispensed and I changed the positions of the broom and all sorts of things. And I was just like, I'm redesigning this street sweeper thing. And I took it back into class and handed it to the teacher. And, you know, I think everyone sort of had to talk about their little invention. And I said, well, you know, I've obviously reinvented the street sweeper because it's really not good enough and the sanitation department needs to be on it. They need to know what I'm doing here. And she said, well, do you plan on driving a street sweeper? Like, is that why you drew it? And I was just like, what are you smoking? Like, why are you out of your mind? I was like, no, I plan on owning a fleet of them. Yeah. And I remember her sort of reacting like, whoa, where'd that come from? And I have no idea. Maybe it's because I was a kid, like, you know, but then also I was a girl and I was handling very masculine things, it occurred to me. You know, I was redoing a street sweeper. I was talking about how bad sanitation was. Like, what little girl pays attention to that stuff? And then on top of that, I was finishing off by the fact that I was going to own it, you know, own a fleet of these. And the sanitation department would rent them.
Of course. And I think it's also important for us to sort of mention to people that you had, sort of a different type of childhood, right? Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah. So I was born in Brooklyn, but my family is from Guyana, South America. And so it's sort of tradition. My parents were the first of, you know, the first generation to immigrate to the United States. And so the tradition is normally to send the young kids back to, you know, Guyana so that we could get that sense of culture, like, infused in us. It's like they had come here, but they came for the opportunities. They came to give us better education and just to give us greater access to things, you know. But it was always this fear, sort of typical of immigrants, like, don't forget where you've come from. So I had all of that infused in me, which was pretty cool. So I actually didn't come back to the U.S. until I was about 7 years old. But that gave me a really different, because I'm considered an American kid, right? You know, like by now, especially, I'm straight New Yorker.
Sure.
But I have this really immigrant sort of perspective. And because I went when I was so young, I was only 2 months old when I went to live in Guyana. When I came back, I felt like an immigrant. And then I came into this immigrant community in Brooklyn. And that sense of work ethic and that sense of building things that were needed and trying to fill spots that were needed. We never did anything that was frivolous. Yeah. It was always about seeing what people needed, seeing what the community needed, and kind of just building from there. And so I think that I have carried that with me, and it's helped me up to now and probably will continue to.
And so we're going to revisit that, right? And I think what's interesting is let's talk a little bit about beauty. You're talking about, like, you know, you don't focus on things that are frivolous. And I think what's interesting is that beauty ads are, and the beauty industry is, it's sort of a category unto itself, right? And so when we think of beauty and a beauty ad, what are we usually looking at? The typical sort of legacy beauty ad, like what do you see in your research and in your dealings?
Yeah. So in the beauty category in general, what I've always seen was ads that point out to women all the things that we are missing and all the things that we are doing wrong and all the ways that we can be better, sexier, younger, prettier. And so I think the beauty community has always operated from this sense of lack. And then if we talk about shaving, well, that's a whole other story, because it's like, well, you're hairy, you're ugly, you know, or, you know, you, I, you know, remember looking at some ads, history of shaving ads as I started building WeShave. I wanted to make sure that if I was going to speak to women like myself, I wasn't going to just talk to them any old way. And I definitely wasn't going to speak to them in the way that, you know, the way that were unsettling to me even. And I'd look up some of those ads and it'd be like, you know, if you don't shave, you'll never get married, you know, that sort of thing. And so, yeah, I think the unfortunate thing about beauty and even some of these legacy brands is they're always coming at the consumer from what she lacks.
Well, and also there's sort of a they're even a little bit more removed from reality even than that, right? So oftentimes, I encourage anyone listening to this to go pick up any magazine and look for shaving ads, because it's just a wonderful scavenger hunt. But once you start looking at them, there's always a wind machine involved or several. There's typically a woman who's been covered in some massive scarf that's
silk.
Billowing. Silk scarf. The silk budget for these ads must be incredible. And it's billowing. Billowing. Sometimes she's been left at the end of a pier. We don't know why. We don't know if she's safe, right? And it's always removed from some sort of reality, daily life, whatnot. She's at a beach. It's sunny. There's a crystal blue ocean or something. And I think what's interesting is that it's not, to your point, you and I talked earlier about some of the changes that have happened in men's shaving companies, where it's very much about solving a very, very concrete problem. You shave, you need new razors. Let's fix that. You don't have to think about that. Here's an efficiency thing we fix so you can skip along in your very busy, fancy life without having to worry about shaving, right? But the women's ads haven't quite gotten there. A lot of the women's the conversation is not really even a conversation. It's really more of an art project.
Yeah, a bad one.
Yeah, which is sort of an interesting place to start.
Yeah.
As far as beauty is concerned, and sort of doing that, and so I think that's it's really interesting. And so when we're looking to sort of solve that problem, how do you do that? Because women aren't used to sort of thinking about shaving at all as a problem, because we're not thinking about shaving, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you get to that problem solving conversation? How do you get to that?
Yeah. So for me, the problem that I started with, and the one that the conversation that I have with any woman, even if before I say that I am the CEO and founder of a beauty company, of a shaving company, I can just say anything about shaving. And she goes, oh, God. Yeah. She's like, what about those ingrowns? Yeah. What about that razor burn? Yeah. And so that was a problem that I had. And so that's a problem that I started with. Yeah. And that's a problem that I knew most women had. You know, research shows that 97% of women worldwide report irritation from shaving. And so I just came honed in on that. I came back to that, and we are really steadfast about that. That's where we're able to really hit home with women and communicate with women. And I think that our job as a brand is to truly get deep on solving that problem. We actually just rebranded our entire line in order to focus on that. We did a survey with a few hundred of our customers, and I said, what have we done well? What can we do better? What problems are you still having? You know, what else can we continue to solve for you? And that's how we have sort of mapped out the trajectory of the line from there. So rather than, you know, showing them sort of billowing silk ads.
Which I appreciate, right? I mean, I wish I could stand out in the middle of a pier with a big old scarf billowing out for me. It would be awesome.
But it's just like, what are you saying? Because my legs are smooth, like I'm going to have, there's one that I'm so sure, unless I'm really making this up, which would be hilarious, but I'm relatively sure there was like a guy on a horse leading a woman down a path that had a billowing piece of silk around her. And at the end of the day, those products are still causing irritation.
Sure.
So I like you said, I think it's an art project. It can't possibly be actually trying to really say something to women mm-hmm. about the type of products and how you know, effective they are.
And you still, though, have to bridge this gap, right? Because there's this massive swath of women who are experiencing irritation, mm-hmm. but don't see it as irritation. They think that is just part of the process of shaving. This is just how it works.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And so how do you get into their brains and help them understand that it actually isn't how it has to be?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
A lot of content. I focus a lot on education and just teaching women the difference between razors, why we focus on a single blade razor, for example, what that means in terms of how the hair is removed from the skin, and just a thread of, you know, a single blade, how hair is removed, how that relates to irritation, you know, talking about the difference between that and a 7, 8, 9, whatever they've come up with, you know, number of blades, razors at
the quadplex.
It's just like, and painted pink, you know. I focus a lot on that. And I actually have, I would say that's one thing that surprised me, because when I started sort of going down the rabbit hole myself and learning about shaving and the difference between blades and how blades are manufactured, I just had the best time in Germany. I was like documenting everything, you know, as we're making our new razor, and we went through the process of, like, it's just a hair's difference, literally, between a sort of good and bad razor or an aggressive or non-aggressive shave. But I thought that I was just nerding out on this stuff. And I was just like, oh, you know, it's just going to be me that's interested. And I realized that the more I have been able to educate women and talk to them about this, the more we have turned these women into not only just customers, but absolute advocates for the brand. Women who write in and say, I haven't worn shorts in 10 years because I've never been able to shave without irritation, and your brand changed my life, you know. That has just been incredible. And that stemmed from educating them. We didn't just sort of come out and say, oh, try this one, it's better. You know, we focus a lot on why it's better.
And what's an example of something that you've learned while in one of your nerding out phases, a detail about the design of the razor, the engineering of the razor, that really does make an incredible difference? What's a detail that sort of surprised you, mm-hmm. that would wow other people? Like, gosh, I had no idea that this detail has such an impact on, like, the performance of the product.
Yeah. So with our new razor, I'm so excited to have gotten to this point, because the angle and exposure of the blade is going to make for the most incredible shave that caters to sensitive skin, that can be, you know, go over curves and over ankles and toes. And I know every woman listening is laughing right now, because we do shave our toes.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
So for me, just sort of coming down to the nitty gritty, you know, for lack of a better term, and understanding that the exposure and angle of this particular blade, this little tiny sliver of blade that's actually touching your skin, makes all the difference. And that's something that I don't think I would have ever have thought of, you know, when I first picked up, or the years when I was sort of shaving with a multi-blade razor. So add to that, of course, that, you know, multi-blade razors just really aren't made for a woman's experience, because the multiple blades are made to actually go over a beard, for example, a number of times, so that with one swipe, you get a closer shave. Which I don't need that on my legs or underarms or bikini area.
that's an important point. And so when you guys are approaching, like, some of your promotions, especially, like, I look at your Instagram feed, and there's a lot of humor in there, mm-hmm. right? There's a sort of a lightweight approach to it. Why is that approach so important? And why, I guess, isn't it being taken elsewhere in the beauty industry? Because I don't see a lot of humor in beauty.
Yeah. You know, the way that I approach this brand and the way that we speak to women is with an understanding that women are incredibly dynamic creatures. I come from a very funny family.
Yeah.
And I've been told I've got a little bit of a humor, bit of humor myself. But I know women to be incredibly smart, well-read, you know, interesting, forward-thinking, just funny also, you know, really dynamic creatures. And I wanted to pick that up in our branding and in our approach. Simple as that.
Well, I think what's interesting too about humor is that humor is about being down to earth, and humor is about sort of like getting at maybe a tough subject, which is like, you know, reality. Like, it's tough. You've got a blade. You're literally running a blade over your skin.
Yeah.
Right? And you could have irritation, all these very sort of unsexy things. Getting at it, having the conversation at all, whereas maybe the typical approach, having a sort of an art project where it's untouchable, where you don't have an opportunity to sort of acknowledge that there's anything but perfection ever.
Yeah.
You know, and we know that, that the process of getting ready in the morning is a hectic, weird process. You're shaving. You're in a slippery shower. You're propped one leg up somewhere.
Oh, right? Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It is not a perfect environment. There's nothing about it that's perfect, right? And it seems to me that it's a way to sort of acknowledge, without sort of getting too much into the details, that this is, you know, it's a perfection is a process. We ain't it perfect yet. We're in a process is where we're at, you know?
Yeah. But that was, you know, that has always been one of the ways that I communicate with my friends, even around beauty, you know? And if you sit down and talk about any woman for 5 minutes about shit, it's going to start with a groan, but at some point in there, you know, we're going to be laughing over something. And that is like the doing the yoga pose, you know, in the shower and so on. And so I really wanted to be lighthearted and approachable. We're making a beautiful tool. We're hoping to change your life. We're making incredible products. But we can definitely laugh along the way, because this has been, it's a little silly, the things that we do.
Well, yeah. And also and art, again, is seen very seriously, you know, when it's not taken as an art project, you don't have to take it so seriously. It can be like, no, this is the daily struggle. This is what we do. Let's also talk a little bit about part of what changing the conversation. So women are very, very like aware of these sort of gymnastics, the yoga pose, right? Doing the tree pose in the shower, right? Hoping that they don't fall over and crack their head open. Men are not. Men are doing their shaving over the sink, or not. Beards are very popular these days. So part of this too, not all funding, but lots of funding. You have to go convince often a guy that, you know, there's a problem here. You know, is explaining the problem all the more difficult, knowing that like your own customer may not realize that there's an issue, but the people that might also sort of help get you like some funding or some early support elsewhere are even further from understanding where you are, right? How do you do that? How do you have that conversation with men?
Yeah. You know, so far we're relatively new in the conversation. I'll probably be fully raising early next year. I have found that with men, the easiest thing to do is just ask them to go ask the first woman that's in their lives, you know? What's shaving been like for her? Does she shave? And even if she doesn't, even if she's waxed or she's lasered to the hilt, it's like you will get the most authentic response ever. And I think, you know, spend 5 minutes with her and that highlights as completely as possible why we're here and why we're doing what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, frankly, just speaking from the perspective of being an entrepreneur, having those numbers, having that growth, showing that, you know, looking at our reviews and showing that we actually are solving a problem for women, I mean, there's nothing greater that we can rely on.
And so as an entrepreneur, you are solving problems constantly in the business, right? That's just every day is a surprise, despite even the best of planning, right? Things happen that you can't control. So what is your process? What do you do when you're faced with a problem? Like, what would maybe be the first thing that would go through your mind? Or what do you how do you approach it?
Yeah, well, the very first thing that goes through my mind is don't panic. Try not to panic. And then I really just try and look at the number of, sort of like a number of solutions. You know, maybe what's the hardest way to go about this? What's the easiest? What's the longest? And I try to break it down a little bit from that. Also, the next thing that I do is I just try and break it down into steps. You know, they say that if you're going to eat an, what is it? If you eat an elephant, you eat it in pieces or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Something along those lines.
Sure.
Poor elephant.
Bite by bite. Yes.
Exactly. But yeah, I really just try to break up our problems, I should say. Problems into smaller bits and pieces and just find solutions to those along the way. In all honesty, as a small team and as a small company, some of these can feel incredibly overwhelming. And that's been the best way for me to solve them so far.
Sure, sure. You've also sort of described yourself as a, depending on tenacity, right? Can you help us sort of understand how you've employed that tenacity through a challenge in WeShave, right? Was there some sort of moment where you're like, okay, now what on earth do we do, right? And you you got through it in part because of sort of depending on your tenacity.
Yeah. So I think for me the hardest thing, and it's probably been a 2.5 year long stretch of tenacity, and that was getting to the point of developing our new product. So when we started, I started using a razor from another brand that I had found in Germany. And I researched them, I tested them, they make incredible products. But as a small company, we were not able to break in the door to work with them to develop our own razor. And so I just kind of kept going back to them. We kept hearing no, going back over and over. And there was a lengthy chain that I sort of had to go through in order to get the process on. I had to deal with distributors and all of that. So I just kind of took that as, you know, I will use that opportunity to test the market. Like, who am I anyway to come out with a safety razor in particular? It's a complex thing. And I want to get it right. So I said, well, you know, we'll use this product as a means of introducing our customers. First of all, proving our product market fit. Is this something women even want? Is this something they care about? You know, are we actually solving a problem? And then it allowed me to take the time to figure out how women needed to be educated about the product. What were their fears? You know, was it the whole, oh, wow, I'm using a single blade razor for the first time. How do I do that? So I had these couple years of really fantastic back and forth with our customers when they let me know if we had done it completely wrong. You know, was there something that we had missed in communicating with them? And also if we had done it completely right. And building that relationship over the course of over 2 years actually was what allowed me to go back to them, you know, with our survey, for example, before we developed the new razor and the new product line and say, what did you think? You know, how's it working for you? So in addition to our reviews, but, you know, not everyone will sort of take the time to say, well, this is exactly what's right or what's wrong. So I felt that like this more in-depth conversation with them allowed that to sort of tumble out. And then from there, we took that and finally we were able to say, these have been our sales for the last couple of years. These have, you know, this is the type of reviews that we're getting in. This is our distribution. And I took that and I found a new factory in Germany, a new manufacturer, took all of that to them. And having that proof now, I think, allowed them to see us from a new perspective. I mean, it was a different factory anyway, so maybe they sort of would have all the same, but it was a little more fuel to the fire for us. And so taking that to them and starting this process from scratch where we, you know, did sort of custom handle and length and weight and finish and everything to create what I think is going to be a game changer of a product. So that's a very long journey in tenacity, but
well, so seeing it not as a no, but as a not yet and a get ready.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that a safety razor is sort of actually a complex thing. We kind of take it all for granted because they're sort of ubiquitous. But tell us, why are they complex?
They're complex because everything has to do with the length of the handle, the weight of the razor, where that weight of the razor falls. So you want it to definitely be a little weightier in the head because you don't want to have to apply any sort of pressure. So it's about the materials that you use and how this razor is just very delicately made. And then, of course, where we've really hit on magic this time is that we have developed a handle that's really perfect for women to use on any area of their body. And then this really beautiful weight that doesn't require any sort of pressure. And in addition, the angle and exposure of our blade is what they call not aggressive. So it's so beautifully suited to a woman's skin because it's not sort of jutting at her skin. You know, it's got like the perfect curve that you can just scoop the hair up. So the combination of those things is what we've used to design this new razor. But for example, you know, with men's razor, when those are designed, you might just think about a man is only using it on his beard. So the handle, you know, length and weight and distribution might be a little bit different. So we have to think about all of the different places that women use it and come up with something that we hope will satisfy most everyone.
Mm-hmm. And what's the capability that these German brands sort of have on lockdown, have unlocked that maybe it's just culturally we just haven't incorporated those into our razors yet? What's the little details that you wanted to sort of make sure that it were incorporated into your designs?
Yeah. So we went to Germany because they actually, they're some of the like very few factories that are remaining that produce these razors, safety razors are there. That manufacturing has pretty much completely disappeared. Those capabilities have pretty much completely disappeared from the US. And there are some other places that do it well. Japan does an incredible razor, for example. But their razors tend to be much more aggressive, and sort of much sharper. So we needed to have someone where, you know, we could like truly just work with them on what we needed and that level of aggression that was perfectly tailored to women. But yeah, they're masters in safety razors and they still do it incredibly well. So that's where we needed to go.
That's amazing. And so if you weren't tenacious and you weren't able to sort of keep on a problem, you know, and just keep chewing on it, eating that little elephant bite, right? How would your business be different?
I don't think we would grow as quickly as we have.
Sure.
And we continue to grow that way. We are bootstrapped currently, but we're also profitable. And so I think that tenacity of going back to the drawing board and continually seeing what have we done wrong, like that's really important to have asked, you know, myself over the course of the last couple of years. There's no assumption just because we have wonderful reviews or you know, get good feedback, there's no assumption that we're solving, you know, like we're really doing what we set out to do. And so I have not only sort of never taken no for an answer, but also I've gone back and reexamined every single thing that we've done and saw where I could make things better and fill in those holes.
Sure. I think what's interesting too about tenacity and persistence, they're words that everybody says, yeah, be persistent, be tenacious, right? And I don't know that anybody actually, when they think about it, really knows what those words actually mean in practice, right? Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes people think that tenacity means throwing your body against the wall multiple times. And that's not exactly the situation, right? I mean, reductive tenacity really involves something else. It means sort of reconfiguring and strategizing and reviewing, right? Can you talk a little bit about how persistence isn't about just doing the same darn thing 100 times and being like, well, why doesn't the world want me, right? Can you talk a little bit about that?
We've never assumed that, we're sort of doing everything perfectly. And I go back out there and make sure that we consistently have that conversation with our customers and leave room to hear if there's something that we could have done better. And then with regards to just growing, I think I keep coming back to the factory because it sort of almost blows my mind at some points. I'm like, oh, wow, this is really happening. Like, we're really about to change this industry. That's incredible. But that took, you mentioned sort of throwing yourself against the wall. That took, I went to the wall, felt around. There was a door. The door didn't open. I felt around, found a window. The window didn't open. Felt around and found a crack. And I think that's how we approach the brand. But I had always the customer sort of in my back pocket who was like, you're doing this right, whether by reordering or leaving a review or just emailing us and letting us know. So I kind of always had that to act as a little bit of a fuel, with that tenacity.
So it's also a matter also of having something launched, a bias towards action. Something is moving forward mm-hmm. while you still have the sort of the big vision able to kind of bite by bite, maybe get a little bit further.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit because it's a beauty brand, right? And as we talked a little bit before, a lot of beauty brands, you've got the lady at the end of the pier with the scarves and all that business, right? And the idea of sort of what pampering is there's a disconnect between what we kind of see pampering is and what women actually are able to sort of cobble together when they've got 15 extra minutes, right? So why don't you share with us, right? You've got a real ladies brand, right? Mm-hmm. Share with us your pampering routine, right?
I've really gotten into the Korean face mask trend. They've made some really incredible products. And so in all honesty, like pampering for me sometimes looks like I stumble out of bed on Saturday morning, scare the bejesus out of my fiance with a face mask and like throw myself on the couch where I, catch up on Facebook or like read an article or something like that. But I'm actually really fueled by what's happening right now in wellness and how that is really changing how women see pampering. And so I think now it's a combination of everything from sort of mental, to physical. So this morning I found myself in a kickboxing class, while I was sort of like struggling to keep up. I haven't worked out in about 2 weeks, but that was my moment. That was an hour to myself. And so for me, and I think for quite a number of women, this is the new pampering. As much as I love going to the spa and getting a massage and facial and so on, that does not happen very often, especially as an entrepreneur. So for me, pampering now is a yoga class 3 times a week, lifting weights, making sure I'm eating well. At the end of the day, truly, I think some of the best pampering I've ever done is just a glass of wine with my girlfriends and just, shooting the breeze. Yeah, I think that's what new pampering is.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just came back from a mindfulness sort of event. The first day, you weren't instantly just sort of absorbed by the vibe, right? Yeah, because I think that your reaction, it would be similar to a lot of people's reactions put in that sort of environment who hadn't been there before. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience? You're kind of dropped in there and you're like, okay, now do I do? tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I came back from a wonderful residency that I was awarded at Omega Institute, which was really fantastic. And so you get up, I arrived in Rhinebeck, and it's like I just felt everything slow down around me. But I had not slowed down, my mind and everything was sort of still going. And so, I got there on Sunday, and Monday I get up, and the most hilarious thing is I come out of my little cabin and I'm overlooking this main field. And right across the field, there's a large event that's being put on by a workshop that's being put on by Jon Kabat-Zinn, who is, you know, the leader apparently in mindfulness and the mastery of such. I had no idea who he was. I had no idea like what was going on. But I step out onto the field to make my way to a yoga class, and there's hundreds of people on the lawn doing this ridiculously slow, very purposeful walk. It looked like something out of Night of the Living Dead. Sure. And I'm like, okay, how quickly can I get home?
Exactly. Of course, exactly. Yeah.
I was just like, okay, this is, and it really just sort of hit me for a second. And it was just like, you're not in Kansas anymore, Karen. Like, this is not Brooklyn. You either you slow down and figure it out, or you get out of here. And, you know, being an entrepreneur, I said, well, I'm going to meet that challenge, because maybe it's telling me that I need to slow down. But I learned quite a bit, which was really wonderful. And by Tuesday afternoon, I was a zombie walker, you know, out there on the lawn myself. But yeah, it you know, gave me quite a bit to take back. One of the reasons I wanted to participate in the residency and why I applied for it is because I would love to figure out how being more mindful can make you a better leader. Sure. You know, I have other entrepreneurs, and as well, you know, in addition to people who work for me, that sort of come to me for advice and so on. And I don't want to be the frantic person who's like, oh my gosh, I'm so stressed, I'm trying to figure all this out. Like, you know, how can I apply mindfulness to what I'm doing with this business in such a way that I thrive as an entrepreneur and the people around me can thrive as well.
Mm-hmm. What are some things that you think might be useful that you might be able to put into practice based on what you learned at the retreat?
Yeah, so, you know, that particular workshop there was a lot of slowing down, a lot of actually meditating, sitting, breathing, understanding, you know, walking meditation even wasn't necessarily about this kind of perfection or anything. It was more learning how to slow down in your actions in and of themselves, which was pretty fantastic. So one of the practices that I actually brought back with me, hopefully I can keep it up, but so far I actually have been meditating every day, which has been wonderful. And I think in general, you know, when we sort of come to business, there's always we have this mentality that the hustle is about this constant motion and just sort of throwing yourself, you know, in front of the train. And I think that was the biggest thing that I kind of took with me. I actually had a moment where I felt guilty, because I said, should I be taking this time away from my business? Should I be focusing on this right now? I mean, who's got time to be mindful? I'm trying to hustle. And I had to really pause and take that in and understand that, number one, if I were a little bit more mindful, I probably could make better decisions and good decisions, you know, with the company regarding any and everything. But also that this hustle doesn't necessarily have to define me as an entrepreneur. I even got to the point where my fiance and I try to do like a play day Saturday, we call it, where whether it's like out riding our bikes or, you know, down by the waterfront, we, you know, eat some great meals in between and just have this day that is not constantly about the business and solving the problems and growth and looking at all of this all the time, sort of stepping away from it. I have found without a doubt, every time I've come back to it on Sunday, Monday, whenever, that I see it in a new way. Yeah. And sometimes that new way really is just don't panic.
Yeah.
Don't panic today. Everything's going to be fine.
That's awesome. Well, that's all the time we have, Karen, but thank you so much for coming here and for all of your insights.
Thank you. I can't tell you how excited I am, along with National Geographic Entrepreneur.
Yes.
Has been like the magazine that I have read for the longest. So this was really, really exciting to be invited.
Well, we're just delighted to have you and to chat. And for those listening, to hear more podcasts from this series, find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and follow us on SoundCloud.